ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the December 2012 edition of Warrior Connection. I'm Doug Rocky, and hopefully, Denise, are you here with us? Okay, hopefully Denise will call in. Bill Butcher, have you been able to join us? Okay, well, I got a couple of people hopefully that will join us. As we're coming out, I had a phone call a little while ago from my sergeant, and he reminded me that 22 years ago, right now, we arrived in Saudi Arabia this week in preparation for Operation Desert Storm. And one of the things that we were specifically tasked to do was teach nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, take care of all the hazardous materials, take care of the preventive medicine side of stuff. We put together the Combat Lifesaver program, a whole bunch of stuff, because in preparation for Operation Desert Storm, unfortunately, nobody was ready. You know, we talked about Army education and training. We talked about Air Force education and training. We talked about U.S. Marine Corps education and training. And it had all failed. And as a consequence, as we stepped in there, Bowers Raiders was formed, and we were given very clear directives to prepare everybody for dealing with a nuclear and biological chemical warfare that was definitely not only just anticipated, it was almost a given thing during Operation Desert Storm. And it's just one of those things that we had to look at. Well, 22 years later, we're looking at the same thing again. In case you haven't missed the news, our president has given a red line to Syria, President Assad, about the use of chemical or biological weapons in the Middle East. Now, I find this all real interesting because we've never had any indication that I know of. That doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but there was no indication that Syria had any chemical or biological weapons stockpiled in all the years I was involved in it. But again, you know, we have to be prepared and we have to use caution. One thing that we do know, the United States definitely gave chemical and biological weapons to Iraq prior to Operation Desert Storm that the Iraqis had used on the Iranians, they used on the Iraqi Kurds, they absolutely used on us. And as a consequence, in December of 1990, again, coming up here in the next few days, after we got over there, we made a decision to destroy all of Iraq's chemical and biological stockpiles in place, resulting in well over 105 sites being destroyed. Kamasi is probably the most famous one. Dave Kiefer and those guys blew that all up out of the 108th Ordnance out of Alabama, along with the engineers. Created a medical environmental nightmare and everything else. Denise, have you been able to join us yet?
I sure have.
Yeah, Denise, you were right. You, when you arrived in theater that night, you arrived in the middle of a Scud attack and to go into Mop 4 and Mop 5, didn't you?
Yes, exactly. We got off the plane and went to the little Kwanzaa hut and immediately had an alarm as we were trying to get our gear off the plane and situated going to Eskon Village. And remember it well. We were right on Riyadh Air Base. And the alarms went off. I remember the driver of the vehicle that came to pick up our personnel, because we had drivers of our 880s and our deuce and a half. And I remember the bus driver having the radio on and it being reported that, you know, it was into Riyadh. One of them had gone into Riyadh, I believe. Not Riyadh, excuse me. One had gone into Riyadh, but one had gone into Israel before, too. But they were reporting positive at that time. So, you know, we were new in theater, having to grab our chem gear and everything else and get it on. Luckily, we had checked our mask and everything when we stopped in Germany and had them all ready to go. So it started at that point at Riyadh. And this is serious, Doug, with the, you know, rumors of Syria using weapons. There were some reports. I don't know if you can brief on that or we can track down anybody, but that a lot of the chemicals were transported out of Iraq and into Syria.
No, none of that ever happened.
None of that ever happened.
No,
I just heard a report of that, didn't know the background on it.
There was some reports to that effect, again, trying to make everything up again, because we have to remember that we made the decision, you know, at that time, exactly, they weren't exactly on goody-two-shoes and good partnerships and everything else.
Right.
And we have to understand, at that time, when everything was there, Iraq was looking at full-blown war. We're all arrayed there and everything else. We've already used them. We developed all of our medical protocols. The Army manual, FM8-285, was developed very specifically in all our medical protocols on the fact that the U.S. provider Iraq for the use of chem biological weapons, and they had used them on the Iranians. So all, as you remember, seeing the photographs we used for training were Iranian casualties.
Right.
And so that was one of the things that we did. So again, we're looking at that. And then you have to understand, again, once we made the decision to destroy all of Iraq's chemical and biological stockpiles, most of the stuff was destroyed by 1991, early 1992. And then Scott Ritter and all those guys, you've met Scott before.
Right.
And Scott and those guys went in there and they destroyed the rest of this stuff. And, you know, again, Hans Blix, Richard Butler, we've all spoke all over the world on the fact that there was nothing there. And again, that was well known. I think the most disturbing part of this whole thing is our old boss, General Powell, went to the United Nations in preparation for Operation Iraqi Freedom, Gulf War II, claiming that Iraq had the chemical and biological weapons when everybody knew there was no evidence. And in fact, if you go to General Schwarzkopf's, as you read his own autobiography, he totally acknowledges that, you know, Powell, Schwarzkopf, all the individuals, and our good old buddy Chuck Horner, were involved in the decision to destroy Iraq's chemical and biological stockpiles up place in December 1990.
Yeah.
I think wasn't it in March of 2001 when you and I met with Chuck Horner to discuss all this?
Yeah, it was at the anniversary that the Kuwaiti embassy put on in D.C. And one of the things I want to mention today and get out clearly is that the alarms were going off during the air war and during the scuds that did come in.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, the reports in theater of the alarms not working and just turn them off. You know, we have to wonder about that for sure now. We have too much illness going on. And I've always said I'm not going to pinpoint one cause, be it chemicals, pesticides, PB, the sand with the leishmaniasis, sand with DU, sand with, you know, the you know, agent in it that we inhaled, to any of the causes, being it the vaccines, what have you. But Doug, what's important now, really important now, is to get the word out to any of the senior commanders. And you mentioned one, Horner. We have to remember Stormin Norman. And these guys are getting to the age now that they need to come clean for their own ability to live with themselves, die in peace when their time comes, and before, if they were forward commanders and knew more, before, if they're ill, before we lose them. And we need the president that was there then, George Bush, 41. We need these guys to tell the truth now. We have lost too many Gulf War vets. The records are lost, as you and I have talked about. We have gone to the Hill so many times to try to do right by our soldiers that we were there with. We're part of that group. We're having health problems, you and I both, and others. And there was a hearing this past week on, you know, the records and problems with VA transferring to digital record that happened on December 4th. And a group of 14 advocates, and you know many of these names, being Paul Sullivan, Anthony Hardy, Brent Casey, Dan Fahey, William Fuzzy, you know, 14 of them, including Marguerite Knox, talked about the records problems from the Gulf War, that them being lost, and the problem that the soldiers have now when they become veterans, trying to get their claims through, trying to get compensated so they can live some kind of quality of life. It's a very good testimony that these 14 put together about how we've worked and the legislation we got through, the presumptives that are, you know, needed, and the block on more presumptives. Right now we have chronic fatigue and fibro, and they just don't want us service-connected. This is the right thing to do, country. And to the senior officers that may hear my voice or the word be passed to them, as a major, retired, I was activated for the Gulf War, U.S. Air Force. I was a proud person to go serve, as all of our forces were. We were ordered to do it. We did it. We need them to come forward now without delay and tell everything they know. If there's any documents that they have in their own possession, it needs to come out. We need to help these soldiers now. We've lost too many of them. November, I think I pulled up over 40 deaths. Many of these are in their 40s. Now, you know, the obits don't give you too much hint, and I'd have to be on the phone tracking down and talking to the families or the mortuaries or what have you to try to get information. But when you have so many dying each month in their 40s, and I think we're past the point, there may be a spare one or two that commit suicide, that give up, but I think we've passed that point. Most of them are just trying to survive. A lot of them are going homeless. Their families are breaking up because they're tired. We need to do the right thing by our soldiers. And how long did it take us on Agent Orange?
Well, Agent Orange is still being debated and discussed,
yeah.
Even though, I mean, you remember when the Zumwalt family gave us the actual report that right. Elmo Zumwalt wrote back in 1990 confirming all
the... And that was after he had died.
Yeah, that was after he died, when they confirming all the physiological effects. And also,
and we still haven't had any press coverage of that, any coverage whatsoever, any discussion on the Hill on that.
No, they're not going to.
And, Doug, we know it's a financial issue for our country. But as I read the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the things that we were promised in the military is we gladly went forward with our lives. But to send us home sick and to have, as I mentioned in a couple of weeks ago, to have injuries versus illnesses, and injuries, very physical, loss of legs, loss of extremities, you know, wounds, you know, devastating wounds that we've seen, OIF, OEF, and New Dawn. That's one thing, and we've got to take care of them. I mean, they're immediately evac, stabilized. We have done beautiful work with them. We have done beautiful work for those family members in the White House and the First Lady and Jill Biden. I have recognized those families more than we've ever seen in the past. Okay, Christmas trees in the White House, gatherings in the White House, Gold Star mothers and wives and families. But what about those of us that were exposed to agents or what have you, still trying to get answers, still having records missing so that claims cannot be processed correctly and adequately, and having to teach our doctors. Now, that's one thing, and I get frustrated as a nurse when I'm going into doctors and I'm having to explain to them my exposures or potential exposures. I have no hard proof, you know. We know Comiseum, we know this and that. But all I get is, you know, when I go through research and try to get answers that way. And our researchers are very dedicated in trying to get help for us. But it takes the government. It takes from the top down. And this hasn't happened in over 20 years. This has got to stop. And when I have to tell my vets, keep writing letters to your rep, to your two senators, write letters to the senators and reps that are on the Veterans Affairs Committee, write letters to the White House. And when we've gotten no action, when we have been forgotten and pushed aside, and I have to say, there has to be something missing here, and it means the truth from up top. The orders, written or unwritten or verbal, you know, to delay, deny, to, you know, not provide care. If there's orders, executive orders, if there's presidential orders, if there's anything from the White House Office of Budget Management, I mean, this had to be high level. You and I know that, Doug. They didn't tell the medical people, of which I was one of. They didn't tell us what was happening so we could provide proficient care in the theater.
You know, we attempted to give that stuff, and I'm looking at the actual lesson plans right now.
Lesson plans and teaching us, which I know we probably ran into each other. I can't remember who taught us when we hit Riyadh. We've been taught at home. We got into Riyadh. We had some refresher-type training from whatever anybody had. And, you know, did excellent trying to be sure everybody going forward would have some training. But to not tell us the truth of there is a low-level chemical or the anthrax vaccine, there may be a problem with it, or the PB pills, 20-something years later is long enough. This has gone on long enough. I've watched enough people getting sick and dying before their time should be. And those that are ill and the vets are trying bravely to do everything they can and try to get answers and try to get help and try to get their claim through and try to talk to their doctors and their doctors to act like they don't know anything. They don't care. They don't want to know anything.
That's one of the things that just happened. Bill, have you been able to join us yet? Are you there, Bill? What I had is a report this last week of a U.S. Marine officer. And he literally took his medical files that he had personally kept in with him to the VA. And as was reported to me and reported to our congressman also, because this was discussed live on the radio here in Champaign, Illinois, he took his medical records in that he had kept with the confirmation of the exposures into the VA doctor. And the VA doctor said he didn't care. I mean, he wouldn't even look at the medical files. What we're finding out, as reported, as you just discussed, and we've had report after report, and I got a direct report down from a guy up in Washington, Colonel up in Washington, the other day again on lost records. It's just horrific. You know, I'm looking at all this stuff and what happened to us and knowing what occurred. And I want to go back and look at, we're looking at what the actual threat was and what has happened to us, and then I want to tie this together for the preparation and training because, you know, the president has put a red line down again. You know, again, we had the red line in Desert Storm, and now we got a red line again.
You know, and one of the things that this document that 14 of our GFR vets, very good advocates, wrote and put together, and I'm so proud of them for putting in testimony, and it's strong, is that we've been there all along. We know the problems that our records from the first Gulf War, and we've mentioned that over and over. We stood firm with when 9/11 happened of not wanting that error to happen again.
And it did.
And so we have continued not only from the Gulf War, but to forward to not providing the care and not doing the record keeping and the physical exams that are needed. I mean, it's called put hand on. Get samples when they leave. Get samples when they come back. Start doing the medical exams before they leave and when they come back. And that it should be done on every individual. Right now, we have a national survey going out that our own RAC committee tried to get them to include in there. And this is only a sampling. I think there's maybe, 10,000 that may be being surveyed. And they couldn't get the questions in that the RAC Gulf War Illness Committee, Advisory Committee, asked to be put in. And to only do a sampling. I mean, this is obnoxious. Why aren't they sending it to every live veteran from the first Gulf War? If we want to make a difference, we learn from us. They've messed with us. We've been their little lab animals, you know, and it shouldn't be just paper surveys. It should be actual, you know, come in, set up special long-term hours at the VA and VA clinics, you know, at the hospital and at the clinics, after hours, in case people are still working on weekends. Do it right for once. And let's do the complete blood draws, everything we can do. I mean, Haley and Ross Perot have done everything they can. When Haley's funds got cut off, they continued to work with what they had done and putting out where the brain damage is. Dr. Haley's plan that he told me was to get the gold standard for the neurological testing. We have other researchers that have dedicated themselves to getting answers. And I have to wonder, because we've had a lot done and not that amount of published research, so are we being blocked getting the answers out? My feeling is now I can't avoid saying yes. There is something interfering with this, and that's why I come on your show today and go, please, pass the word. If you're in touch with any other colonels, any other generals, get them to start speaking out. We've had the enlisted, the NCOs, few of the field grade officers, but we haven't had the higher-ups. And I think back to the testimony of Thurman Norman at Powell. At the time that we were even, it was even being talked about on the Hill that there needed to be a blanket presumption for Gulf War.
Let's, I'm looking at the actual lesson plans and everything that we wrote. Now, Denise, as you've seen, if you met all of Bauer's Raiders and talked to them, I mean, Jim Runge is now gone, Command Sergeant Major, Andres Carnegie Both, Colonel Dr. Both is gone. And the horrible thing with Colonel Both and everything that really bothered us as our overall MedCom commander, the top dog, you know, in charge of all medical for the whole Army, they were in-laws. Yeah. You know, and so we looked at the problem. But I'm looking at the actual briefing that we did. And Denise, you've seen a copy of this, and you've been when we've taught it. You were afterwards, and we taught it in theater, before theater, when we were ramping everything up. We had the real threat. And this is, again, that's bothering me right now because I'm seeing the red line drawn on Syria. We had the nuclear and radiological threat, ionizing radiation. Well, obviously, the nuclear weapons there, and we know Israel. We had a big discussion on our radio show last week, again, with the world's expert on that, one of the world's experts. So we have all the nuclear weapons there. There's no doubt about it. Israel possesses them and the whole thing, and things could go sour really, really fast. All the radiological materials, I mean, depleted uranium is a horrific problem. I mean, I was specifically assigned to clean all that up. God knows why. I mean, to this day, I don't know. You know, maybe God had a reason for ordering Schwarzkopf to go clean and tell me to go clean that mess up. But depleted uranium's a mess. The United States continues to use radioactive dirty bomb weapons all over. We definitely provided them to Israel. Israel's absolutely used them in Lebanon. They absolutely use them in the Gaza Strip. They had used them, as you've seen, everything, because we had the testimony right in the National Academy of Sciences. Remember that? They used them in 1973, and that testimony was right there, and Admiral Zumwalt wouldn't talk to us afterwards, I remember. So we have that. The other thing, too, with all the radiological equipment, as you've seen, what's been verified and proved and everything else, 100%, all the Soviet equipment, all of that Warsaw Pact equipment had incredible radioactive isotopes in it, very, very dangerous radioactive isotopes as part of the equipment. So when we blew that up and destroyed it, we spread all that stuff all over. So incredible stuff. Then we had all the radiological isotopes, again, proven from all over, from the destruction of the agriculture, medical, industrial, educational arenas, universities, and all that stuff blowing up. So you got the radiological mess. The other thing, too, we ran into, and this is going into military operations, is the incredible hazards from microwaves. We got all the communications equipment. You're out there doing it, because I know prior to Desert Storm, and I was involved in this, we had to go around and set up isolation area for all the microwaves. Anything exceeding 10 milliwatts per square centimeter is absolute total exclusion zone, and the safety hazard is probably 1/1,000th of that. Ultraviolet, the same thing, all the infrared. This, again, non-ionizing radiation, incredible problems. The biological threat, again, the president has put a red line out there for the biological threat for Syria. Whether or not Syria has anything, I have no evidence of it, but again, they put the red line out there. Iraq had the biological weapons. We have the biological weapons. We had given them to Iraq. That's all in the RICO Commission report prepared by James Toot for the United States Senate. Again, was a subject of a made-for-TV movie. You know, Denise and I, you were both and I. Well,
I can tell you, I saw Senator Riegel, 2 years ago, or a year ago, on Veterans Day, we had him give a talk to the coalition. And he is as passionate as ever on the Gulf War veterans and how we have been betrayed.
Yeah, so the biological weapons were there.
Yes, I was there and talked to him. He was asking me about people that he referred to, and I've kind of forgotten their names, and, you know, kind of briefed him on the ones that he referred to and how they were doing. And he is concerned still. Chris Shays, who tried to run for Senate this year and didn't get in, very concerned. Kucinich, who has been on our side, very concerned. Sanders. But none of the leaders in Washington, on the Hill, have taken up our cause. I think our last hearing was back in, I remember one in 07, and I think there was one after that. And despite all the hearings we've done, all the research, you know, the veterans are the ones that are hurting. And this has to stop. We have to care for our troops or who would volunteer again? You know, we're an all-volunteer force. And they're tearing up the morale of veterans that, I can tell you, I know veterans that their family members are now serving. They're kids. You know, I couldn't encourage my kid to do it. I wouldn't.
Yeah. We look at the chemicals.
Until they clean up their act and start caring for the people that have been damaged.
When we look at the chemical warfare agents, the stuff that we knew in all the nerve agents, we got sarin, cyclosarin, Soman, Kaboom, Novichok's in multiple sevens. Again, this was all verified during Operation Desert Storm. It's been verified again since then at congressional hearings, so we know that it was there. The alarms were going off all over the place. I know recently here, I just took my scans, my own brain scans, you know, from the stuff we did down in Texas, same as with Haley's,
right.
And I showed it to my civilian doctor, and there again, this, you know, says thing, incredible nerve agent exposure, all the damages there and everything else, and we're seeing all of this, and again, when you look at it, then you know the physiological effects. When Bob Haley came up with this stuff, verifying this 100% on the Seabees and everybody where we knew the scud with chemical agents hit them, and then he found it in their brains. It was horrific. So we got all the chemical warfare agents. Now, if the red line in the sand as drawn by the president is accurate, we have to have the equipment. Now, sadly, what we do know, ladies and gentlemen, if any military equipment people are listening to us, we unfortunately know that the gas masks that we have, whether it's the M-17, the M-40, whatever series you have, are ineffective. They don't work. I mean, they didn't work on the biological. They absolutely didn't work on the DU particulates and everything because it's way smaller than the filters will filter out, and it definitely didn't work on the chemical agents. And so we got all of this problems. One of the things that we continued to do and we tried to teach, and again, you've seen the memorandum, we know that the mop suits were defective during Desert Storm. We know the mop suits were defective during Operation Iraqi Freedom. We know the mop suits were defective during the Balkans campaign and into Somalia, even though we were using this stuff. So we have all of this stuff. So when we got, you know, mop level 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, to really do any good against any of this stuff, you have to go to mop level 5. And that's where you take the poncho and you take a lot of duct tape, and you got your mop suit on, your mask, and now you put your poncho on, and then you tape yourself literally into a baggie. I mean, when we did the work at the Nevada test site, we were in, you know, Department of Energy, you know, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the Army super baggies, and I've been in way too many. You've seen the photographs of our team. Rollo and I have been to Level A too many times cleaning up Project Shad stuff to count. So it's horrific. But if we're going into this stuff and we got a red line, the civilians in the area, I mean, the Middle East is a very, very small area. We know the distances of travel. Kamacia alone. I think, Denise, you got a letter just like I did because you were absolutely downwind from that. We were looking at over 200 to 300 miles where Bernard Rogers sent us a personal letter. And this was, we both found it funny, you know, because we were the guys put out the warning, then he sends us a letter warning us we were exposed from Kamacia. So just Kamacia alone, the warning area that where they know confirmed exposures, warning a letter from the Department of Defense to individual exposures, was over 200, 250 miles. So if we're looking at any of this being used whatsoever in the Middle East, and I have to put a warning out, I mean, ladies and gentlemen, if you know anybody or influence anybody there, any of the leaders of any of the nations, and I don't care it is, they cannot use any chemical, biological, depleted uranium or any of the other hazards they have. Even common explosives are horrific. when we look at the byproducts of common explosives, it's just absolutely devastating. The horrific side effects from common explosives. You know, we don't all think about that all the time. One of the things that we had that problem where it showed up really totally was in Vieques, Puerto Rico. Because down in Vieques, Puerto Rico, we definitely had depleted uranium use in preparation for going to the Balkans, but we had all of the conventional explosives too. And again, anything where we have the mixed waste conventional explosives, which, as Denise, you've treated way too many casualties, you know that the byproducts of this stuff is not totally consumed, so you not only have all your wounds and your injuries from shrapnel and everything else, but you have all the contamination. So all that guidance is very specific. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has very specific protocols, and this is approaches for remediation of federal facility sites contaminated with explosives and radioactive waste. EPA guidance from 1993, again, they picked it up after we came back and we started working our duns off to get this all done. But again, the conventional explosives have horrific medical and side effects. I mean, Denise, you're treating not only the casualties with the shrapnel wounds and direct wounds, bullets and bombs, but you're treating all the hazardous materials casualties up there in the front line. What did you see? I mean, you had it in Desert Storm. I think, what, Vietnam? You were at...
Vietnam, I was back at Wilford Hall.
Yeah, you were Wilford Hall at Lackland. I mean, I've been hospitalized there, too.
But I mean, the thing is what I saw in theater, which couldn't put together then, and until I think it was Shea's second hearing when they kept saying it couldn't have been chemicals because there was no acute symptoms. And acute symptoms mean seizure activity and all that.
We saw the minimal problems all over the place. You
but
don't have to have
acute
reactions.
Now we know, like, Jim Bunker went down, had a seizure. We know, you know, scattered reports from others that were, you know, sick in theater and couldn't function. The other thing I saw was, and it took me a while to put it together, and it was basically, I guess, a low-level exposure that they never taught us about low-level exposures. Never. And so I saw klutzy. I call it klutzy, clumsy behavior. Behavior of weird things happening, like being instructed for years of unexploded ordnance and avoiding it and calling, you know, ordnance detection teams and all that, of people getting out there in Tours or Us and, you know, even hearing reports of, you know, a bouncing Betty being taken back to a tent, you know. I mean, it was dumb stuff, like they had lost their neurological functioning power and confusion, irritability. Saw a lot of confusion, irritability, insubordination in the ranks, and things happening that, while it was happening, you know, it was hard to put it together. You were going, what is going on? I mean, I had, when we were in Riyadh, and we had packed all this gear, so we knew what was on our trucks, but to keep us busy, they said, go inventory everything, tear your truck out, repack it, things to keep the troops busy, right? Well, one of the OICs that was going to another location was sitting there trying to give away her equipment. I'm going, whoa. We divided it up evenly so we'd all, you know, have what we needed. You know, we supplemented our packing list, went to Wilford Hall to supply people, and probably Fort Sam too, but, you know, we begged more equipment of things that we thought we'd need, be it Pluravax, be it, you know, what have you. You know, we made a list of things that we could think of as critical care nurses and all sitting around and going, okay, this isn't in our unit material. We need to supplement because we're going. And she's trying to give away Pluravax and things like that. And I was going, what is going on with this person? I've known her, and I couldn't figure out that behavior. And watching my own troops, the behaviors were not PTSD. It wasn't trauma. It wasn't stress. Because, I mean, at that point, we were in Riyadh. And then we got to KKNC. Some went to King Fahd. And, you know, then I put this together, I guess, when I was up there on second hearing of Shays, that they kept saying no acute symptoms. I was going, whoa, wait a minute. I remember what they taught us, and it was all acute death-producing symptoms. What if it was low level? And what would you see? And I paralleled it with, you know, concussion, you know, having a car accident and have a brain injury from that, where you're alert, but you're irritable, you're not thinking straight. Those are the ones you keep in the hospital maybe for 24 hours, or if you release them, you give good briefings to their family members, stay with them, wake them up, watch them. You know, if anything develops, bring them back to the hospital. Concussion-type symptoms of the confusion, the irritability, memory, you know, that kind of thing, which I said, well, a chemical effect to the brain is going to affect those things.
You know, one of the things
we were never taught low-level exposures. And I was sitting there going, okay, acute level could also be masked by the PB tablets, which was discussed at a hearing. So, you know, that could have masked some of our symptoms and decreased them to some extent. And so it was like a whole cover-up going on. And I got back, I called a Navy nurse that had been in theater in Vietnam and served Gulf War, you know, who I'm talking about. And I said, Julie, you know, I just came back from D.C. and I'm thinking something. I talked to them about it, but I want you to do some thinking and think about what you saw in theater. What did you see? What could you document that you remember that was strange to you? I want you to think for a while and then call me back. Within the week, she called me back, and she was just rattling things off. And I said, Julie, was this PTSD? I mean, she's older than I am, had the Vietnam experience in theater. And she said, no, most definitely not. And I said, Julie, were you ever taught in the Navy low level? No. Were you taught other environmental exposures, whatever they may be? No. And I said, is it possible what we're seeing is neurological damage like a concussion? And she thought about it, and she said, yeah.
You know,
I talked about it with other medical people, and they agree with me.
Herb Smith had brought this up in multiple times, medical conferences, and Herb, when we looked and saw this during the operations in theater, I mean, you've been there when, I mean, Julie, Herb, and all of us were sitting there discussing all of this stuff. And, you know, all this stuff, Herb is having those clarity moments where everything has come back, going, my God, we saw this, we reported it, and we saw it.
Yeah.
The low-level effects.
And the things we saw before the first Presidential Advisory Committee, when Hillary Clinton came and spoke at that first one. One of the things we were talking about is they're drawing all this blood, doing the registries and all that. And I said, one of the things we're seeing is an alteration of our basic lab work from before the war till after, but they weren't abnormal. They were borderline. But they had gone from high levels, very healthy levels, to borderline. And having been a critical care nurse, ICU, open heart, the whole bit, you know, I was sitting there going, what is going on? People are not paying attention to looking back at our records of what we had before we ever went over there on our lab work and compare it post-war. No one was doing that. And I was sitting there going, okay, those of us that are medical, do we have our records? Can we look at it? I mean, I had a dentist end up for me. You know, he went and looked, and he said, my gosh, something happened to y'all. Now, he was concerned his brother had gotten Agent Orange, so he was concerned, and he said, something happened to y'all.
If I remember, we were down in a medical conference in Dallas where they drew the blood on Julie, Herb, you, and I.
Oh, yeah, did a dark field.
Yeah, and what they were seeing was frightening.
Oh, yeah. We were talk of the exhibit area. There was a lot of quiet behind-the-scenes talking going on.
Yeah, there was all of a sudden. I mean, here we have the individuals directly involved. We know what their exposures were. We know what their assigned duties were. We're looking at the command staff individuals, and they're all zapped, and they're all coming up sick. They're all having similar physiological effects. And our ages were scattered all over the place. So we're looking at this synergistic relationship. I mean, I'm sitting here looking right now, And God bless him, Colonel Dr. Andres Kornigbath, he is gone now. I mean, him and Colonel Little and Jim Runge are the ones that went up there and did all the oil well work. Immediately when it started, they put out the immediate medical requirement. I'm sitting there, we're looking at the Kennison report, mandating thorough and, you know.
Much less your general that I think we talked to three-way over the phone once.
Yeah.
From Idaho. And is he still alive?
I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
we've lost track of so many of these people that you directly knew, and we're not sure if they've just gone quiet, if they're sick, if they're dead. I know I've tried to look up certain names and tried to find them and haven't. We have reports from all over the place of I'm trying to find my unit mates, you know, and they can't find them.
Yeah,
they can't locate them.
There's a handful of us. I mean, you know, when Rollo called me earlier this evening for the radio show and I asked him to come on, and you know, he wanted to call and say, you know, Doug, it's right now when we got over to Saudi Arabia, we got the order because we were specifically, as you know, ordered to go over there for the chem bio, has materials and all this stuff, and bring it back alive. And we saw all these hazards, and now we're all sick, and too many of the guys are dead. Andres is gone. For sure Tom is gone. We know Jim Runge is gone. Mad Dog Blue, Kiefer, and all those things, Bill Arell. I mean, the whole shebang. You know, when I'm looking at just the oil well byproducts and what we had total confirmed, ozone, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, centipene, benzoanthrazine, bifenyl, cryazine, fluoroanthrene, phenylanthrene, pyrene, particulate, cadmium, chromium, nickel, lead, batmium, zinc.
Well, and I remember the RAC bringing in people that, you know, had data on the firefighters. And what they have to remember is the firefighters didn't come in until pretty well the war was done to put out the oil fires. And they had super-duper gear. So they kind of played down at the RAC the exposure to oil fires. And yet I was sitting there going, wait a minute, they weren't in theater the whole time and going, you know, through the, and living like the Marines and the Army did and being saturated in the middle of all this, much less getting downwind, and at the border it came down to us. It went on down to King KKMC. I mean, I remember moving back and the retrograde movement, and we left, and it was still, you know, worse than the smog you would see in L.A., I guess.
I mean, I've got photographs showing me where we're in it, and the stuff is settling out on us and everything else. I mean, when we got appointed to the Center for Disease Control, again, Chris Shays, Bernie Sanders were involved in this in 1999 for that February, end of February, early March 1999 conference on the Center for Disease Control. Mikey and all his guys, Mikey Kilpatrick, they tried to disavow the oil well fires, and Colonel Dr. Andres Kornigbath stood up, full Army uniform, senior Army colonel, senior Army physician, the expert on it in theater and afterwards on the Bowers Raiders, and he started telling exactly what they found and what it all was there, and again, it's now out. And I remember, you know, when here is the guy that did it, trying to put the information out, and the Department of Defense and even the CDC was trying to disavow any knowledge when they're getting the firsthand experience and the firsthand report from the individual that verified the problem, put out the warning, and directed medical care. And he
continued
to do that.
Exactly, and that's why, thinking about Kornigbath and the ones that tried, you know, I go, there's got to be more out there, colonels, generals, that should stand up now before it's too late.
You know, what is going to happen? Okay, let's make a supposition.
Sorry,
everything
too late.
Is coming coming apart unglued. Suppose that Syria really does have chemical or biological weapons, all right?
Mm-hmm.
We know Israel has all of them, for absolutely for sure. We know they have the nuclear weapons and everything else. We're not sure exactly what Egypt has. Everything would be frightening, but you've got that whole Middle East and everybody all around there that could turn into a nightmare. Are the soldiers and everyone of our military in the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, and Bill, have you been able to join us yet by chance? Okay. Had a U.S. Marine that hopefully was going to join, a Marine officer that could tell exactly what was going on. Because frightening thing for him, again, he was out of 29 Palms, and what he's reported, they didn't have any of the training that was necessary. So what is going to happen? Are our troops prepared? Do they have their proper equipment now? Do they have the decontamination equipment? Do they have the decon station set up? if the stuff is used there, you're going to have to provide medical protocols and medical stuff. You're having to do decontamination. We have to look at all of this stuff, and I think, you know, when we do reverse triage, I mean, Denise, you've been there when we've taught it before, and you had to taught it. When you look at the reverse triage of how you're going to do triage for real chemical, biological, nuclear warfare.
I can say this, Doug.
Most doctors and nurses freak out.
The Air Force evacuation staging facilities that were all along the border. Now, I know the training from the 32nd group. The other group that was over there was 37th. I can't speak for their training because they were over stationed in Florida. But as far as our group, the flights and squadrons below us, I don't think the training was adequate. I know the equipment was not there. I mean, we have been trained about litters and having, like a chain litter that you could wash and scrub somebody off back in front. We didn't have any of that. We didn't have the supplies that we would have needed to decon where we were at the border before we put them on a plane and evac them out. I have talked to those that were at the hospital units, okay, along the border. Everybody was evacuated from inside Iraq and Kuwait backwards. And I don't think decon sites were even functional.
The one decon site that we did have was a theater decon site down at Escan Village, and you've seen the photographs and all of this of that. Rollo and I put together. Andres, was instrumental as a scene machine
and
physician.
If that was the only one.
Yeah, and what it was designed where the worst of the worst, where they're bringing them through, where they're taking them out of theater, and even there we had a gigantic pit dug where we were just going to put the expectants. Now, one thing, people, when we come down to the civilian people, they think in an NBC or WMD event, or especially in the military, they can put it up in a small area. We're talking, ladies and gentlemen, the minimum size for an effective decontamination station. And this is in the handbook of Medical Management, Chemical and Biological Casualties course put out by Aberdeen Proving Ground, Maryland. I mean, there's different variants of it. 2 or 3 football fields in size. That's how big it has to be. And you have to watch out for all of your downwind conditions, all of your water and flowage conditions, which way is it going to go, because you have to come in, you're all hot and you're all dirty, and then you have to strip everything off completely, and then you have to go through decontamination, then you have to get into a completely cold area. Now, the problem we do know all over is the wind shifts and everything else, and have to understand, this comes back to the letter we got from Bernie Rosker specifically to us in Camisea. 250 miles. So when we're looking at a few
and
hundred
they,
yards...
You know, that study has been questioned because they tried to reproduce things out in Salt Lake City area, Dugway Proving Ground, and that study, you know, was kind of disproven because you really couldn't duplicate, you know, what we had.
You can't duplicate. That was what happened with the depleted uranium.
And
they
so the
us
numbers
to...
on Camisea kept changing, kept altering. I don't think they had any idea in the end of the vast amount that were exposed.
You know, and there was over 105 sites that we definitely blew up. You know, again, we were sitting there talking with Chuck Horner and confirming all of that. I think that one of the most frightening things is when the three of us there with Chuck Horner that day and all of us were sick and all of us confirming, and Chuck said, yeah, well, we had to blow it up, and he was right. We did have to blow it up to prevent deliberate use, but...
And I think that they did not, and one of the things that the Tuitt report points out in the annex or appendices is that sarin does not burn. Does not burn up. It would vaporize.
Correct.
And I don't think they ever... You know, if they were going on, we can blow the stuff up, you know... I think they made false assumptions that their troops would not be exposed. Well, it didn't burn. And that was one of the key things, one of many key things in the Regal report is the temperature that stuff would burn up. And it would burn. It would vaporize. And so I think they made false assumptions, false data, and thought it would be limited. And I think our chemical warfare, and you could probably tell me more, Doug, I think our chemical warfare training was more around the thing of if you're in an area and they throw you know, a bomb, a Scud at you, and it's chemical. And it could be contained. And then you would have decontamination sites away from that area.
Right.
I don't think they had any adequate planning or could have let me put it this way, could have adequately planned. My husband at the time had he had been a pilot, and then he ended up with some injuries, and he ended up with being a mobile augmentee for, you know, that exact work. And so before I get deployed, I was having him bring things back from where he was going for his duty, which was up in Wichita, Kansas. And I was sitting there trying to plan in my head of how would we salvage our medical equipment and how would we use that. You know, would it get through the plastic? Would the plastic IV bags? How could we protect our equipment? You know, the thing that I thought about was, number one, we can't put everything out on shelves. You know, we'd have to use, you know, the cases that we carried it in and try to protect it that way. I was thinking all the time of contingency plans, things that we had never talked about, in training.
The other thing, too, we had this stuff.
I mean, when you're facing going, you start thinking about a lot of that.
Yeah. So many people thought that the equipment they had at the unit is some different than what they get for warfare. We had individuals that thought there was going to be a special stockpile. They actually didn't bring their NBC equipment or any of their medical equipment over there. Thought, and all of a sudden there was going to be this massive stockpile
of new stuff.
So
I know what was happening at Riyadh was as units came in, they were having, you know, if unit came in fully equipped and brought their stuff and had like 5 or 6 suits, they were turning in everything but 2.
Correct. I was involved in that decision.
Others that had not brought anything.
I was involved in that decision. I mean, D.G. Zulus and everybody else and Colonel Holland made that decision. Again, Colonel Bauer and everything, Colonel Andres Carnegie Bout, Mass Sergeant Fales. We had to make that decision because when units came in unequipped, and we had to share the equipment we had, would put everybody in horrible risk. Well, you know, we're running down on time here, and Denise, I haven't had the opportunity to tell you, but here in East Central Illinois, and this individual I know has had incredible impact all over on protecting military and saving military, U.S. Air Force and everything, Father Stanley Malinowski did die this last week, Denise. And I know he had worked with you and you had talked with him. He was a Catholic priest here at St. Elizabeth in Thomasboro, Illinois. We had his funeral yesterday, or on Friday. And he had worked with all of us. He had worked with a lot of Vietnam veterans. He had worked with everybody all the way through, back through the years of World War II, providing the assistance and help, the religious and everything else, and also providing the prayers as we went out and gave talks. I mean, he was involved when you got nominated for that big Catholic honor, and was a knight or something. Mm-hmm. I know he was involved in that. But again, we need to remember him. God has lost an incredible servant, calls him back to home. Father Stanley Malinowski, parish priest at St. Elizabeth in Thomasboro, Illinois. I mean, I'm going to miss him. A lot of people are missing him. Military people from all over have already indicated that, plus the civilians. And Denise, you know how instrumental he's been in helping us through the years get through everything.
Right.
So again, that's one of the things we have to remember, and things happen and things all change. Bill, have you been able to join us yet? Unfortunately, I guess not. Well, you know, we have to think about this. A lot of stuff we've talked about, but now we've got another red line. What's going to happen with our military personnel if Assad does use chemical or biological weapons, or if we make a decision to attack? We have the infrastructure already being destroyed, so hazard materials are being definitely released. We've got radiological release, chemical, biological are already released all over that whole area. People are already sick. We've had those confirmations and everything else. Denise, as a nurse, what can you suggest or what can you recommend?
I think, you know, first off, you know, as we've said before, all of our military people that are active duty, number one, I want you to get a copy of all your medical records. Make a copy. Get them. Make copies of them. Your personnel file would be good also. Then you need to start keeping records of your hospital visits, your doctor's visits. You need to think and do that before you're ever deployed. We've been saying that since we came home from the Gulf War and knew the problems with our records. You've got to maintain those yourself. Don't trust that the government will do that for you. The other thing is that if you haven't been over in theater anywhere, I've always mentioned to the people that want to have children, maybe a sperm bank for them to maintain their sperm. You know, if females want to harvest their eggs, which is something different, a little bit more invasive, but these are things that you might consider doing if you were in the military and haven't already been in exposure zones. I think you have to keep a record of the people you serve with, their addresses, their phone numbers, their next of kin, their family members, be it an aunt or uncle, a way to find them once they come home and separate from the service.
So, ladies and gentlemen,
be able to reconnect with your own people.
We're at the end of a show again. If you're in the military, make sure you get the equipment, the training. If you get into these environments or anything happens in the Middle East, God bless America. God bless soldiers. Denise, thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you, Doug, for all you've done and for our other veteran advocates that have been working for 20-something years and our Vietnam vets that led the way. Thank you to each and every one, and to the family members and individual soldiers. Write those letters. We cannot let up on them. We have to keep writing letters to our senators, reps, and to the White House.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and have a good evening.